coming to you live from inside the globe, perched high atop the Bugle Planet building in sunny Gotham City. It's Hey Kids Comics with two guys who are always ready to seduce the innocent, your hosts, Andrew Farmer and the Jedi Cole Houston. And now it's time for Hey Kids Comics.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Hey Kids Comics. We are here for issue, I believe it's 203, right, Cole? 203?
This is 203, yes, indeed. Cage match!
You all right?
Cage match!
Okay, all right. I'm just watching it. It's better than Igor voice, and that was not permission to do Igor voice. Now, so we are your hosts.
If you're unfamiliar with the Igor voice, check out Hey Kids Comics Halloween Special number 1 at a Jedi Cole universe near you.
No, don't. It made my butt pucker. Like I said, it felt like I was getting slapped in the back with a wet cod. That's the best.
Hi!
Yeah, that's the way it felt.
The God of Cod.
So, yes, we are your hosts, Andrew Farmer, and we've already derailed. I don't know where this is going to end up. Andrew Farmer,
it's
and...
It's going to end up in a cage match!
Oh, Jesus. Jedi Cole...
Meanwhile, standing on the bridge, looking down, waving, is me.
That's right. Catherine is joining us once again. This will be, what, is this your first double, like, your first two-parter, like, back-to-back, like a comic book special, like... The crossover event. This might be the first back-to-back guest.
This is the first time that you've done a back-to-back episodes with us.
Yeah,
I believe that is correct.
And one of the only times anyone's done back-to-back episodes.
Right, and those two episodes could not be more different yet alike.
It's nice to be somebody's first for a change.
because the last one you were on was The Tick, and this one is what, Cole?
Cage match!
I feel like I have that on one of those morning zoo buttons that I can hit now.
But cage match!
We waited until
now.
You
know, the city council was weighing in this morning on some important issues. What we like to call here at the zoo, cage match!
Hey, kids, comics in the morning, home of the... So, we did not do a show on Jessica Jones because we were kind of waiting till now to do that so we could combine the Jessica Jones Luke Cage narrative into one show. But I've got a couple addendums.
We had to have a man involved before it was.
Oh, here we go. Here we go. Here we go.
Yeah. It's not that we were remiss in doing a Jessica Jones episode. which we were, but in a way it worked out really well because of the synergy between the two shows we'll be talking about, and also this show is being brought to you by Andy and Sasquatch in the morning.
That's right, home of the cage match. But I got a couple addendums right off the top, a couple notes. Little news for the show. First of all, I saw a really stupid commercial, and I decided that Hey Kids Comics is now going to be the first bespoke comic book podcast.
Bespoke
comic book podcast. So
why do I know that term?
Because it refers to suits that are made for the wearer. So, like, if you go into a suitery, I think that's the official British terminology. If you
isn't
go into
that called tailored?
Well, but if you go in straight off and you have them make the suit for you, so you can bring somebody a suit and they can tailor it. If you go into the British guy, you know, in the waistcoat with the monocle, and you know, Jeeves makes you a suit.
Yeah,
from
so basically,
scratch.
He has just bolts and bolts of cloth.
Right.
And then he cuts away everything that is not a suit.
But actually, it's like the block of marble that there's a statue living
exactly.
in waiting.
Except that he also sews together the pieces that are a suit.
But no, it was on At Midnight. For once, we're going to steal Chris Hardwick's joke instead of him stealing ours. Yeah, I'm calling you out again, Chris. I see you, Chris. He was talking about the emoji con on the last episode of At Midnight, and under it says the first bespoke emoji convention. And I'm like, what the hell does that? I'm using it. So,
oh, wow.
So that's number one. We are going to be the first bespoke comic book podcast. You figure out what it means. We don't care. We're just using
Chris
the word.
Hardwick owes us a bump.
He does. He's stolen so many of my jokes.
Somebody need to just do the at midnight or
whatever,
and hashtag the hell out of Chris Hardwick and tell him he needs to listen to this damn show.
Yeah.
Also, yes, this is a bespoke podcast in the sense that we will cut away everything that is not podcast. And sometimes everything that
is a podcast.
A podcast.
And the second note worthy of mention is that today I bought one of those unicorn masks on clearance, so I now own a unicorn. So expect lots of pictures of me in a unicorn mask. That's all.
Wow.
I just want to get that out.
You know what I regret is I didn't buy, and they're probably all gone by now, the chocolate ice cream mask.
Oh, the poop emoji mask? The first bespoke coal match? What?
No, it's a chocolate ice cream. That's what it said on the label.
Oh, yeah, that's what it said on the label? Of course it did.
So
you want to wear poop on your face? I can arrange that. But anyway.
Why would anyone want to dress up as a...
But anyway, we aren't here to talk about unicorn masks or bespoke podcasts. We're here to talk about... That's so good. It works every time. Hee-haw, hee-haw.
There's like a whole bank of buttons.
Yes.
Like, no, it's a bespoke cage match.
So we didn't talk about Jessica Jones. We were, I will be honest, right off the top, I was scared to talk about Jessica Jones. And
really?
And I think that if we're talking about these two projects together, and you know, as sort of a whole in this universe,
I thought Jessica Jones was fantastic.
No, it was brilliant.
No,
it was amazing.
It was nothing short of brilliant. Yeah, that has nothing to do with. I don't think his.
Things
yeah.
you don't want to talk about is like the Catwoman movie.
No,
we had to.
No, there's things we can't talk about and things we don't talk about. Is the fact that I didn't feel qualified or enough, let's call it qualified enough as a middle-aged or younger middle-aged white male to talk about Jessica Jones without coming off as smarmy or pervy or weird. Like, and honestly,
because the plot is smarmy, pervy, and weird.
Yeah, it's a middle-aged white dude. Okay, so I want to start here. This is where I want to start. We're going to get into jokes and Easter eggs and errata down the road. You know, Catherine has it coming at it from a different angle than Cole and I, because Cole and I are, you know, entrenched in, you know, the actual comic books. And Catherine not so much, but she has a lot of insight in the TV shows. But I want to start with this. These shows were, you know, coupled in with Daredevil. They're in the same universe. The references are all there. These shows did something different for me than the Marvel movies or the DC movies or even Daredevil did, which is these reflected comic books in an interesting way, and that way was that they were socially relevant. They told a social story.
Oh, that is true. Yes. And so in a way, this, you know, having failed, I was thinking earlier today because I dwell too much on this kind of crap, but having failed to cover Jessica Jones back right after it aired the way we did with Daredevil, because all we could think about was Daredevil, it actually worked to our benefit in a way to couple these. It seems like, oh, they're just kind of glossing over. But the reality is coupling them together works out well because they both have that very theme.
Whatever helps you sleep at night, buddy. I'm not gonna
need all the help I can get.
I'm not gonna jump on that. I'll jump on the sword and say we were awful, awful people for not covering it up front. We don't hate women. But the no emails, please. At the risk of being at sounding like a social justice warrior, both of these shows equally made me feel, and I don't want to say uneasy, but they made me take a look at the, much like comic books are supposed to do, much like I think Luke Cage did, much like, you know, the Alias
comic book that Bendis did, which were the source materials for these two, plus like X-Men did, or like a lot of Alan Moore's work does, or, you know, Grant Morrison, I'm gonna get his dick out of my mouth one of these days. Grant Morrison did.
No, you're not.
No, I'm not. I will when you take Moore's dick out of your mouth.
All right, touche.
But they made me really think about the story, the message, the medium, reflect on it, and use it as, you know, hold the mirror up to myself. Catherine, do you agree with that? Or not? not the Alan Moore, Grant Morrison stuff. That's just Cole and I.
Yeah, that's just between me and Andy and them.
And they don't know it yet.
I don't know if I know what I'm agreeing with.
just the fact that these things really made you think. It's something you don't expect from
I'm following you now.
Yeah.
Yes, in my personal opinion, both of them were wonderfully written, wonderfully acted, and they were nice, deep, rich storylines where all the characters, or at least the majority of the characters, were multidimensional. You didn't have, you know, several well-developed characters in a backdrop of cutout characters, and also one thing that really impressed me was both Jessica Jones and Luke Cage I think, what most people have been wanting for a long time, is they were gender and racially diverse without hopping up and down and waving their arms going
screaming,
check it out, look at the wide variety of people we had. All the characters were all just these wonderful characters doing wonderful character things, where gender and race didn't, you know, for the most part, factor into it. Now, once we get to talking about Jessica Jones, I'm gonna hop up and down and say yay about how a lot of the female characters in that interacted, and how they interacted with each other kind of differently than male characters interact, which really impressed me, because I thought that it was really well written. It wasn't written as we took men and we just inserted women, but right. No, women do communicate differently, but we'll get into that later.
I do think men would be a lot better if sometimes we took men and inserted women instead of vice versa, though. I will say that. I think they would learn a few things. But no, you're absolutely correct in that assumption, and I think that there was
also,
go ahead, Cole.
Yeah, but I just want to real quickly speak to your point, though, is there was such social relevance. You know, it's said often that art imitates life and life imitates art, and the two sort of operate in this cycle in much the same way that a lot of movies inadvertently imitate life. Like, they're going to be in production a year or more in advance of release, and then right before they come out, some shit happens.
Right.
That is eerily like something in the movie. And either if the movie comes out and everybody's like, oh my God, that was just like in this, or the studio, I have mixed feelings about when the studio does this, they delay a movie for 6 months or a year because of some accidental coincidence, which statistically speaking is likely. You're very likely to have coincidental instances. An example is there was a – I'm going to draw a blank on the name of a period gangster film that included a scene where, like, the mobsters or somebody goes in and I guess, you know, trying to get the mobster or whoever they're after, go down and just start mowing people down wholesale in a movie theater.
Right.
That
right.
was wrapping its post-production when the
I thought it was Gangster
Rampage.
Squad. I think it was Gangster Squad.
Yeah,
like,
I think you're right. It was
Gangster
Squad. And, you know, that was wrapping production about the time that the madman goes in and actually mows down people in an actual movie theater. And in a less severe way, I think, especially Luke Cage, became sort of oddly well-timed.
Right.
In speaking to a broader – it was already speaking to a very socially relevant issues, but it became, you know, in a ways benefited, if it were, as it were, from, you know, becoming even more underscored by actual real life events.
But also I don't want to steal anybody's thunder here, but don't take away from the social relevance of Jessica Jones, because what we have there, and we're seeing it right now. Now, I'm not gonna, we've already made this show as political as it's going to get. We're not going any further down that rabbit hole, but we're hearing a lot right now about people accusing people of sexual assault and physical assault. And the question's coming up over and over again: if these things happened so far in the past, why aren't women coming forward when it happens? Why isn't this happening?
If to say that it's that simple.
Right. Which brilliantly was portrayed in superhero terms in Jessica Jones. She literally could not come forward. It was a literal, like, a mind control could not come forward. Right. The creepiest supervillain in any comic book TV show or movies ever, literally ever, in David Tennant. Good God, I'll never look at him the same. There's no way I'm ever. I can't.
Yeah, it was so good that there's been a lot of time for other doctor, at least one other doctor, to come in so people can
cleanse
not
their palate.
They won't be completely devastated by seeing their hero debased in this way.
But that's the feeling, that's when I was watching Jessica Jones, that's what I was we hear a lot of stories about people not coming forward until later, or victim blaming, things of that nature. And I think that it was portrayed pretty on the nose beautifully in Jessica Jones, why a lot of women and men, but women for the by and large majority don't come forward in abuse cases. And it's because they literally don't feel like they can. Through threats, through whatever it might be,
intimidations, and
well, if the story is out, then there's actually kind of a strength in numbers, because if you've been through something that someone is coming out and saying, you know how hard that is, and two, it's a combination of you want to do the same thing, but you also want to come out in support of the person that's been through the same thing you have, and together you can kind of have a bit more credibility than you do on your own, because surely at the time something like that did happen, you did tell somebody, and you probably weren't believed, or were probably played down, or were probably told,
or perhaps even advised not to say anything.
Right.
Exactly. So,
and I think you were talking about the strength in numbers as well. It becomes almost like a proof of concept. If there's more than one of you, then it sort of disproves the idea of, you can laugh off one, you can wink away one or pay off one, but when the droves come out and the skeletons pour out of the closet and the cows come home, as it were, or the chickens come home to roost, as it were, then it's harder to ignore.
Yeah.
And I think that you see that especially in Jessica Jones at the end, when her lawyer is saying, I dare you to bring this to court and try to disprove mind control, when, one of this guy's MO was to either mind control people and then kill them, or mind control them and then just sort of abandon them in a world that would never believe their story.
Enslave them until you drop them
so
off on a street corner.
People,
do you want to suffer in silence or do you want to be committed? It's your choice.
Yeah, because nobody's going to believe any of this crap.
Which is a direct metaphor for what happens. That's an absolute metaphor. You're either not going to be believed, you're going to be called a bitch and a liar, or you're going to keep your mouth shut and just suffer with it.
Right. And I also accept the fact that whenever stuff does start to snowball like this, there's always the pretenders that have to hop on board. And I'm sure that there are a few people in many circumstances that after a few legitimate victims come out,
want to
hop on the bandwagon. But that shouldn't discount the legitimate victim's complaints.
Exactly.
And I think that...
Well articulated, yes. By the way.
Well, thank that's you. Why we have Catherine on here, to remember. Yeah. Catherine comes on to make us look like knuckle-dragging mouth breathers.
Yeah, because otherwise we're just sitting around all night going, Cage Match!
Otherwise this show would be called Middle-Aged White Guys Almost Gonna Figure It Out. We're coming real close. That's the new name for Hey Kids Comics.
It was originally called As Close As We're Gonna Get.
But the thing about Jessica Jones that really struck a chord with me was that it was telling people that no matter how horrific, no matter how evil, no matter how unfathomably unspeakable something happened to you, right? And, you know, directed, kind of targeted towards women, which it needs to be, right? Because you are, and no matter how strong you are, like physically or mentally, these things can still happen. They will still happen, but you're strong enough to get through it.
Oh yeah.
And I thought that was a very powerful message to send.
And further, to actually further that point, the character Jessica Jones begins fractured.
Yes.
She has been the victim since childhood in many ways. She's sort of, you know, put into this family where you have, you know, stage door mom to the budding young star.
Right.
Who, you know, then is able to try to, you know, Patsy's able to rise above, but Jessica isn't. She's always weighed down by that. In many ways, she becomes the obvious mark.
Right.
For Kilgrave. This is exactly the sort of fractured mentality that he's going to thrive on, and perhaps in many ways you begin to see that he sees a bit of himself in her.
Right.
Because of his own parent.
Well, and also, I was going to say, also, it's a comic book show. Also, there are superpowers in it, but go ahead, Catherine. Well,
one of the things, I know this is Cage Match, but still on Jessica Jones. And, of course, when I heard this was coming out, I mean, it was like strong superhero female and David Tennant. I'm there with popcorn and Merlot.
She was.
Oh, man. Anyway.
For like four nights of binge.
Just straight through.
With superhero stuff, because I enjoy the genre, I will, and I do this also with James Bond, because James Bond, you quite often have these villains that really, at the end of the day, don't really make any sense. Their evil doesn't really make any sense. They'll spend trillions of dollars in infrastructure and manpower to get, like, something that they could have had easily, they just could have bought.
Right.
You know, or something. I don't know.
Yeah,
but
that's easy for you to say. That's why you're not a super villain, and they
I guess not. So no worries about me.
Yeah.
Kilgrave's character actually had one of the most plausible of in the whole
I hadn't thought about that. Yeah,
he was totally obsessed with a love interest that he couldn't have, and he had this rejection. That has to be. I'm not a guy, but that has to be in the top three things that drive men crazy, I think.
Well, it is. No, it is. And as much as women, guys that aren't prone to that behavior. I'm not saying that we haven't been through it, but guys that aren't prone to that behavior have known men that are. That either are abusive assholes, number one, or B, are just normal guys that have been rebuked and just can't get past it.
Well,
there's this, what's interesting is the casting is kind of unique in the sense that I feel the Kilgrave's character represents this very, or what strikes me, I may be wrong here, strikes me as a very American sense of entitlement.
Yep, I would agree with that.
That entitlement runs rampant in this country in every aspect of society, and in some places that's a very frightening thing, and in relationships, entitlement is a very frightening thing. And here you have someone who can take that entitled sense of being a stalker and someone who just knows that, okay, no, but you don't get it. You do want me as much as I want you. You just don't realize it yet. You just haven't given me the chance, and have people to back that up.
Right.
In ways that, you know, would be enviable to the Shifty creeps.
Yeah.
Adopt that sense.
It's a total fantasy for the obsessive abuser to have that kind of power.
But what's really interesting about that power, the way that it's depicted in Kilgrave, is that you start the show when you're introduced to Kilgrave, which is you know about a third of the way through the show, you're really introduced to Kilgrave as a character. It starts as a straight kind of noir. We've got our main protagonist, Jessica Jones. She's a PI, but she has superpowers. She's got some strength. She's got some durability. She can jump real hard. You know, she's pretty rad. You know, so she's bringing down the bad guys, bringing them in. Working for Matrix lawyer. What's her name? I forget her name.
Carrie Ann Moss lawyer.
Thank you.
No help there either.
But then you're introduced to Kilgrave, and Kilgrave, we find out, has. And in the comic books, this is true as well. But I thought it was interesting that in the comics, he's known as the Purple Man, which he kind of is in this as well. But he's completely purple in the comic books. Couldn't get away with that in the TV show. But completely.
Right. Yeah, I applaud them for not trying to find a way to make that work.
They did though. That was the coolest thing, was that they did make it work.
Try to make to go all in purple.
Yeah, no, they didn't go. They didn't go David S. Pumpkins purple on him. They kept it back. But you know, when he would use his powers, there would be a purple gel that they would use over the camera.
All of his clothes.
One of the things I did notice was the purple elements in his in the costume.
All the costuming.
He always had either a tie or a shirt, or there was always some purple. And also when he gets dear old dad to cook him up the super sauce.
Yeah.
When he's writhing after the injection, if you watch very closely, his neck is a bright mauve.
But the cool thing about the character, I thought the depiction of his powers was when they introduce him and you start seeing him work his mental magic. Our thought as human beings is, if I had that ability, if I had the ability to get in and control anybody's mind, to get him to do whatever I want, you know, it would be like a Budweiser commercial all the time, right? I'd have speedboats and twins and, you know, but eventually.
Oh my God, that's a deep cut.
Yeah, wasn't it though? But later.
The McKenzie dog, but even happier.
Right. But as you watch, that's.
I would force movie theaters to show Treat Williams film festivals.
Oh my God. Like Fire Down Below with Treat Williams and Steven Seagal.
Like headlining was so fine.
Oh, I don't know what. Everything is wrong with you. You realize that everything, but you realize.
I just want to force people to look up So Fine.
But by about the fifth or sixth episode of the show, you realize that no. If you were born with this power, this is the way you would walk through life. You wouldn't have, you know, you wouldn't be driving through a fleet of Maseratis, you know, shooting AK-47s just into the air with, you know, that's not like a solid gold pimp suit. And you would just move through people. And that's what he does. He moves through them. He doesn't exist with us. He moves through us. And it's so creepy. It's so creepy.
What's tragic about him, and I'm along with what you're saying, is that he knows that he'll never be sure if anybody genuinely likes him at all.
So he can't let anybody. So in other words, he has to take control of every single person in his life to validate his existence, which is sad and creepy and just
And the thing about squirmy. It is, when you have that, growing up with that ability. This is one of the first times we've seen in a superhero type genre an exploration of growing up superpowered.
Right, for sure.
And that psyche, it turned out it was Ryan O'Neal, not Trilliums. But growing up with the ability to control people's minds, you become the Wish It in the Cornfield kid.
Right.
From Twilight Zone, only worse, especially after this is what happened to the Wish It in the Cornfield kid when he hit puberty.
Yeah, exactly. When he grew up and got a 9-to-5 job, this is what happened to that kid. Like,
or when,
at a call
when
center.
The short hairs grew.
It's, yeah, it's.
Because all of a sudden you're shifting gears from, you know, all of life is just like
when
a puppet
the
show.
Short hairs grew.
When the short hairs grew.
When the short hairs grew.
That was the follow up book to Where the Red Fern Grows.
Yes, it was. It remained unpublished for like 30 some odd years, like that.
And then remained unpublished for 30 more. But, you know, unlike when we get into certain, when we talk about.
It was literally a coming of age tale.
Oh. When we talk about Luke Cage and we talk about Cottonmouth, when they introduce Cottonmouth, Cottonmouth is instantly sympathetic and stays sympathetic throughout his tenure on Luke Cage. At least I felt that way. You know, I felt that I understood his drive. I understood who he was and what he was trying to do.
Yes.
And I did feel sympathy for him. On the other hand, they took Tennant right up to the sympathy line, but they never let him cross it. You got right up to the point where you could see sympathy, you know, across the trench.
Yeah, you can see sympathy across the street waving.
Yeah.
And then he takes over sympathy's mind, and sympathy does unsympathetic things, and you're like, oh, screw this.
Right. I never once felt full sympathy for that characterization.
The only point at which you can adhere or, you know, allow any sympathy for Kilgrave is in his childhood, because you know, it's another one of those things, I didn't ask for these powers, which is a central theme to that. Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, none of these people asked for their powers, but what did they do with them once they got them?
Right.
Jessica tries to disappear from them because her powers were abused as a puppet to another, to a madman. Luke Cage tries to just sort of, he just wants to be a bartender and a bar owner. He wants to be left alone. But the Purple Man wants to be loved on his terms.
Right.
And the thing about it is, you also see, especially at the end, this realization that always nagging in the back of his mind is he can make anyone he wants love him, but he's making them love him.
Right.
So he can never truly know love.
Right.
Yet he wants so badly, especially I think it's Jessica's ability to resist him that makes her irresistible to him.
It's exactly what it is.
Because she's the only person that holds the potential to want to love him with her free
exactly.
will.
So if he could just hang on to her long enough for them to be the last man and woman on the earth, if that's what it takes.
So what did you you know, I think that's a pretty good exploration of the show, but but Catherine, what did you like what did you learn from the show comic book wise? Like, what were you excited to see when it happened? Like, what to develop, to grow? Like that, I'm curious to know that stuff.
Or what did you look to your left to find?
Right. What did you pause it and say, what is that?
What we call swiping left. Well,
right. Comic book swipe left.
Okay,
comic
well,
book Tinder.
Well, first off, like I said before, I hold high hopes until I'm disappointed about female, strong female superheroes, and I don't want them to be anti-men, and I don't want them to be femme fatales. Really, it's like, you know, fighting until the other superhero shows up, and then they can, oh, thank God they showed up. But just
kind of like,
a nice, strong, standalone super person who is – it's not – it just happens to be a woman.
If I can interject real quick, would you say like, say, in – I think it was a Winter Soldier or Avengers, one of the two were – I think it was maybe Avengers with Black Widow.
Yeah.
It's being interrogated by the Russian guy.
Uh-huh.
And she's playing the, you know, oh, I've been captured, and if only
exactly.
someone could save me, and then she just kicks everybody's ass.
That was fun, because she was, in that case, she was playing a gender role to get what she wanted.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah, but I was wondering if that's rather what you mean there.
Yeah, yeah.
By way of illustrating your point.
But also, she's not a, I can do this better than any man kind of thing. She doesn't have that kind of emotional baggage, which...
Yeah, the only place where she is really illustrates she can do this better than a man is drinking.
I don't know. So she did a pretty good job with it at sex, too. Like, they took a bed apart. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, that being said, I was really pleased with the character. The only giggle that I had as a woman watching this is obviously she doesn't worry about her hair and fashion and all that sort of stuff because she's a very downright practical gal. But for the sake of the screen, she never manages to get anywhere or be anywhere without a good dose of mascara and lipstick.
Well, sure.
But
that's every superhero's power, by the way. As soon as you get any superhero power.
That is solely
man,
because,
woman.
That is solely because Jessica Jones is in a constant state of cosplay of Jesse's girlfriend from Breaking Bad.
Well, I don't know if you've seen any of the trailers for the upcoming, and I don't want to make the show not evergreen, but any of the trailers for the upcoming Maybelline ad that is Doctor Strange. But Benedict Cumberbatch is... He is front loaded with Never Run mascara. I don't know. If you're traveling to the astral plane, make sure that your toner matches your skin color. Cause...
Well, it's rather like, you know, the Emmett Kelly clown makeup where you want to be able to see your facial expressions from the back row.
Right.
When you're in the astral plane and the mindless ones are firing their optical blasts at everything because they're mindless.
That makes this a Thursday, huh?
Yeah, but yep. You want to be sure that Dormammu or
Mephisto, any of the ones.
Yeah, Mephisto or the Despair or the hoary hosts of Hoggoth can see you batting your eyes.
That's right. That's right. But anyway, yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Like it was
but
like.
Anyway, I accept it as it's part of the theatrics. We're getting there, but we're not where you can have a woman in that particular position completely sans makeup and
true.
Completely sans there's you know you can have scars and blood all over your body, but you can't do that not too much to the face. And there's these boundaries that we're still at cinematically, I'll say, that they won't cross just to make it appealing to the majority of the viewers. And
I think you're right because at points Patsy was wearing less makeup than Jessica.
Right.
Right. Right.
That's true.
But that's okay. It's where we're at the storytelling in this generation. Next generation will be different. But I did love, and I before we get off Jessica Jones and on to Luke Cage, her dynamic with Claire was just a treat because men, and this is my own personal opinion, feel free to disagree with me, when they meet, have a smile, have a handshake, but they're very limited in disclosure. They'll talk about, you know, sports and cars and anything but themselves. Women are very different. Women will meet and they are full disclosure and they expect full disclosure. And that's what I got between Jessica and Claire. It's like, oh, we're different. Oh yeah, I know you're different. I know, you know, it's like, okay, here I am. I know superpowered people. It's okay. It's fine. Well, I've got this problem. Well, here's some information that I have that might help you. Okay, that's handy. I'll use it. And it's like bang, bang, bang. It's no get to know you. It's like I've got a problem. Here's everything I have that can help you.
Well, look at the reverse dynamic in the latest Daredevil season 2,
okay,
where you had two guys. One without superpowers, one with superpowers meeting, and they spend half of the season beating the crap out of each other before they come to an accord. You know, that's the dynamic that you see in comic books from men. Is
right.
You can't have two men meet without a punch fest for 17 or 18 pages before they realize
really,
there's something else going on.
You got to work off that excess adrenaline. Oh!
Yeah, that you got to burn through that testosterone before you can actually have a conversation, right? So
you know what's good for that?
what's that?
Cashbox!
That's right. That's right. But no, I did love that dynamic. Like there wasn't even a rivalry there. It was right. Just like, okay, down to business. Like, we know what needs to be done. We're both very down to business people. We're okay. Not flighty. We're going to stick with our characters. Cause it would have been very 10 years ago. That conversation would have been like, you're dating my boyfriend, or I know, you know what I mean? Like that would have been the thing that happened. But instead of that, what you get is a really just real kind of like, you know, police drama, gritty, down to earth conversations.
But also,
let's get the shit done.
You have a wonderful narrative that is chock full of strong female characters without being like, well, you know, if you're a strong woman, you're a bull dyke.
Right.
Yes. Granted, there were gay women in the mix.
Right.
But it was, they were there because that's part of the tale that was being told. To, you know, to not have them is to pretend that things like that don't exist, potentially. But to have them, it wasn't just like, oh, we've got a gay character in here because we need a gay character in here. It worked within the dynamic. The strong women were strong because they were just strong women. You brought back Claire, who was a wonderfully dynamic character.
Oh, I love her.
With Rosario Dawson, who I just think is amazing, and is on the list. And
I'll give you that one.
In a huge way. I mean, like, from, she was like the only thing. Was she in Men in Black 2? Was she the actress I'm thinking of who was like the only good part of Men in Black 2? you have all these strong female characters without it turning into an estrogen fest.
Right.
And
exactly.
Luke Cage is in it not as the testosterone counterpoint.
Right.
He's not there to be the guy so the guys will watch the show.
Right, and he's not there to save the day.
No, matter of fact, he's there as the damsel in distress.
Yeah, she has to carry his ass out of
which I thought was great. Was a great turn.
Yeah, wonderful way to illustrate her powers. To Claire, he's like, this again? At this point, it's old hat. She's just, you know.
She's like, all right, stitch him up. Like, that's fine.
I gotta read up on Asgardian physiology. Because you never know!
And honestly, who wouldn't want a nice unconscious Luke Cage just to snuggle up on for a nice nap?
It's not one of those WAFU pillows, Catherine. It's not it's not one of those things you pick up at the anime convention. He's a living human being.
Cat's out of the bag. That's what I got her for Christmas.
Oh, you got her! You got her an unconscious Luke Cage pillow.
Yeah. Good thing I kept the receipt on the one I bought.
You never know. Yours might be nicer. Let's not.
What I like about it is, unlike a normal waffle pillow, which is nice and soft and cushy and has a lot of give, this one actually is like stuffed with like lead pellets or something, because it's like nice and firm, and it's like having Luke Cage actually there in your bed with you.
So can we
who wants a Luke Cage that your head just
this
sinks
seems
in?
Like this seems like a good transition period to go into Luke to talk about Luke Cage. Okay.
Are you hot?
I'm warm. Ooh, I got the vapors.
I'm sorry. Just your seat in here. Okay.
Ooh, Lordy.
Well, yeah, let's get a little sweet Christmas action going on.
But let's talk before we move on. Just for Cole and I's edification, and probably Catherine's a little bit too. Can we talk about some of the nerdgasm stuff that was in Jessica Jones?
Oh yeah, we do need to talk about some of the little Easter eggs and other little things that were dropped in there in Jessica Jones, because that's one of the things I love about the modern take on the superhero television or movie done right.
Right.
Is there are subtle nods that don't matter if you don't know the comic, and we don't have to stop and explain it. If you know the comic, you're going to have a nerdgasm. If you don't, it's just another line of dialogue or just another thing in the background.
Well, the great thing also about these is when they're introducing a major player like Hellcat, like Patsy Walker, like Nuke. Which, by the way, Nuke, of all the friggin' people you could have put in this show, Nuke, like all of these guys.
I had to get educated by Andy on Nuke.
They had to, you know, they're doing it in an organic fashion that isn't hitting you over the head with the idea that these things exist. So we're getting introduced to Hellcat, and we're getting introduced to Nuke, and we're getting introduced to the Purple Man, and we're getting introduced to Jessica Jones and Luke Cage, and they're doing it in an organic narrative that isn't like, here's another superhero, her name's Patsy Walker, you know, like they're actually treating us like adults that can figure this shit out, instead of like it's a cartoon, which I think means we're growing.
Or if we don't know, the internet is there to be our guide.
Right. I think that means we're growing as a viewing population, and they don't feel like they have to smack us in the face with it, which is great. I can't be happier for that. But anyway, go on. So the Easter eggs that we're seeing.
Absolutely. Well, like some of them from Jessica Jones, of course, like you mentioned, Nuke, Patsy Walker, the fact that Hellcat, I knew enough about Hellcat's origins to know that she was like a comic book. She actually started out as like...
She was very meta.
Yeah, it was kind of a meta thing because her character started out as kind of a Millie the Model type of comic book at Marvel that was a girl's comic book about Patsy Walker and... And then they sort of folded this character that didn't exist in the Marvel Universe proper into the Marvel Universe as an adult whose life was this young model or actress or whatever from those stories that didn't exist in a superhero-filled universe. And they just sort of borrowed that character and moved it into the Marvel Universe, which is rather a brilliant maneuver.
Right.
And then she gets superpowered and decides to, you know, put on a costume and fight crime and, you know, the male eyes roll. And then she goes and kicks some ass. They're like, okay. You know, suddenly Captain America decides, okay, I was a little dickish.
I was a little dickish. I was a little dickish.
You know?
Why is Captain America in the parlance of what we're talking about?
I'm from the 40s. And,
okay.
You know,
We were
a little dickish on women back then.
That's why you're Travolta-ing.
Yeah.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure.
I was a little dickish.
You know, I wasn't trying to be. So Hellcat was cool because she doesn't have powers.
Yeah.
Like she was.
But they handed her a bottle of powers.
Right. They handed her a bottle of powers, and B, you got to see her trained to become like the Krav, like she's doing Krav Maga and she's learning how to fight because she doesn't want to be a victim, which I thought was a very cool conceit.
And also she wants very much, especially by the end, it's like, no, I'm not sitting at home by the phone. I'm coming with you.
Right.
Yeah, I enjoyed seeing the emotional growth of that character.
She's being groomed to become a superhero. And the other thing that's great is I think in Jessica Jones Season 2 we have tremendous potential, I hope, to see Hellcat in costume. Because she's the one who's trying to get Jessica in a costume. Mm-hmm. Of course she wouldn't be resistant to wearing one herself.
Which, by the way, how great was that? Was it when they pull out the old gym costume? It was like, try this. You're like, hell no. That was awesome. That made my entire thing right there. Like, it was a great show, and then they bust out the old costume because I'm like, there's no way. There's
no
way
in
hell.
They bust out her costume. But they bust out her costume precisely. That is the most comic book accurate costume in the history. Apart from Spider-Man, like the old television Spider-Man series. That is the most 100% comic book accurate costume ever.
Right.
And it's just dismissed. It's kind of like that, the Supergirl in the pilot when they bust out the bare midriff costume. She's like, I wouldn't wear this to the beach.
No, I thought it was fantastic. They introduced Nuke with sort of a PTSD narrative there. They really went all in on a lot of social kind of issues on this show.
Psychological issues.
Yeah, which I thought was like, I thought it was very brave. It was a very Netflix thing to do. You know, I thought it was, I don't want to be like the guys like, oh, it was very brave. That was a very brave stance. But I thought it was I thought it was a brave take on the comic book genre. Like, they really got kind of deep into some stuff there that I honestly didn't think they were going to have the stones to do.
It's comic books grown up.
Yeah, that's
yeah,
true.
Yeah. And I'm so happy that Netflix and these God, what would you categorize them as? Independent producers or not network?
Yeah, they're
not networks.
The streamers,
are,
the cord
really
cutter.
Getting
yeah.
into this because they seem to be so much freer to be. To explore the kind of creativity and depth and the especially the maturity level of the storylines, and this is like a renaissance for this sort of thing as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, you're not wrong. You're absolutely right. Like that's what we're seeing, and I think that's what we're all, you know, any fan of genre TV. So it doesn't have to be just superhero stuff, but any genre yeah. TV, sci-fi, horror, superhero, like this is our heyday. This is what we've been waiting for. I'm not going to use Cole's most hated phraseology, but we've been waiting for this for a long time, and we're finally seeing
well,
some of that.
As you know, if you've listened to the show,
that's true.
We are in the Tanzanite age.
We are in the Tanzanite age of comic book television.
This proves it. So moving further into the Tanzanite age, how about some Luke Cage? So with Luke Cage, you're having a wonderful opportunity to directly expand on the previous series with Jessica Jones. So you're basically picking up where Luke Cage is like, okay, I'm on the lam. He goes back to goes to Harlem, kind of finds a way to disappear with a sympathetic character who you discover is the reasons that that Pop is so sympathetic to Luke's cause over time. But you get this great opportunity to just sort of jump right in with a character you're already familiar with, and then much like Jessica Jones, you have this sort of prevailing, you know, almost Dante Hicks. I'm not supposed to be here today.
Right.
You know, you get these heroes who that's not what they signed up for because they didn't sign up for anything.
Right. Well, I enjoyed the fact that, like you said, you start out with a character you already know what he's capable of. He you don't know his origin yet, but you have a really good idea of what he can and can't do, which is a great. Even if, like, I never read the comics at all,
right?
But I enjoyed knowing him before I watched this.
Well, you know what they say: to know him is to love him. That's when it comes to Luke. That's what they say. So
that's what they say what you want, but don't play games with my affections.
Really. God,
you hate me so much. You love me.
I do. Aww. If we weren't joined at the mind, I'm telling you.
I know. So, another thing that's so wonderful is you get this great kind of urban. I hate to use the word street, but I'm thinking a lot of people were ascribing that to this production, but without it becoming, you know, too much of that. It didn't, in much the same way Jessica Jones doesn't try to cram some feminist agenda down your throat, there's not a racial agenda. It just happens to be a racially charged story.
Right.
In a traditionally racially centric part of New York. And, you know, when you talk about New York, you're not being un-PC to say racially significant sections.
Oh, yeah.
Because
there's
Chinatown, for God's sake. They actually call it Chinatown.
We're gonna get there in about 6 months. So I'm
yes, indeed.
It did come out during a time when a lot of problems nationwide with the police and relations with the police were very much in the news. So you were talking earlier about social commentary and it being relevant. I agree that Luke Cage is definitely did address the time that it was being released.
But you know what was interesting for me in that respect was the police were important, right? But you didn't – but it wasn't a police – it wasn't a story about police Until kind of the end. I guess it was at the end, but it wasn't really that story. It was it was not about police. It was not about, like Cole was saying, it wasn't necessarily even about race. It was about, you know, it was about the neighborhood, and it was about doing good, and it was about crime and what crime means and why crime, you know, why this is happening. And I thought it was, I just thought it was really interesting, you know, and it was very cool.
Why it's important to take a stand even when you don't intend to. Luke Cage becomes that classic anti-hero who literally does not want to do this, but yet at the same time cannot walk away, because as you learn his origins, you discover injustice has been too big a part of his life to walk away from injustices being foisted on others.
Right.
Especially when you have it within your power to have power over that. And in the case of I can't remember the character's last name, but Cornell
Stokes.
Cornell Stokes, which ironically I got studying. Initially, I was thinking this was an attempt to at least give fanboys a little taste of the Serpent Society,
right?
With Cottonmouth and Diamondback.
This was pre.
Then I got to thinking, yeah, Diamondback was a girl.
It was a lady.
It was a lady.
It was Captain America's girlfriend for a while.
Yeah. And then Cottonmouth was like this guy who could unhinge his jaws, and I think it was poisonous or something. But
such comic book nonsense.
Way back in Power Man or Power Man and Iron Fist, there was actually a character named Cottonmouth, or Cornell Cottonmouth.
Right.
Who was a pimp gangsta type who had like razor sharp teeth. And when I was researching the character, I thought it was hilarious. His henchmen will never get to be seen, I'm afraid. Mike and Ike.
Oh, man. But what is hard to remember, and it
because
was not...
people might mistake them for candy.
What's hard to remember, and it's not popular, right? But this comic book came out at a time when it was a reflection of society, when Power Man was created. And it was, for lack of a better term, a blaxploitation comic.
Oh, absolutely. It jumped on the blaxploitation bandwagon in the same way that Master of Kung Fu initially jumped on the martial arts madness bandwagon.
Right, right.
And after a while, it stopped being a Bruce Lee clone. And what's wonderful about the character of Luke Cage is that he's so very 70s in his original incarnation, and becomes very 80s, very 90s, and very 2000s. And it's okay.
What I thought was the coolest thing about – one of the coolest things about these two shows is that they were filmed in a way, written in a way, and put together in a way that was, for lack of a better term, timeless. I can't tell you – it doesn't
– yes.
It could be
yes.
95. It could be 86. It could be 2016. It could be 2026.
But
these shows were filmed in a way that it doesn't matter when it happened.
Oh yeah, but for a very little bit of the musical choices, which I love the fact that, like a lot of the Marvel movies, Netflix is taking that same approach where they let each project be its own thing.
Mm-hmm.
They all exist within this shared universe, but Ant-Man couldn't be more different from Captain America or any of the Avengers films, and Doctor Strange is going to have its own flavor, yet they all have that common thread, and that's amazing. And with this one, the approach that was taken was to have that musical thread that moved through the whole thing.
Brilliant.
As carried especially by Cottonmouth. And one of my favorite scenes, really quickly, just to touch on the character of Cottonmouth, we mentioned earlier about him being a sympathetic character, was here you see this bloodthirsty gangster type who's, you know, willing to do whatever it takes to achieve his dream.
Right.
And you get that wonderful scene where there's like a couple of chicks in his office and he's just sitting there at that little keyboard that you never noticed was there before. And he's just sitting in this darkened office just very lost in the music. And I, for the first moment, I'm like, wow, this is character development.
Absolutely.
Yes.
It's that very subtle character before you even know his history.
Well, you get the feeling that, and like I said, they went out of their way to make Cottonmouth sympathetic pretty much from the point at which you're introduced to Cottonmouth. You know, he is an older brother. He wants to protect. He's going to do things the old way, but he's doing them to, in his mind, to better his community. Right? He's still going to make money. He's still going to hustle. He's going to sell drugs and guns. But that's what he knows. And we find out later why he knows it. But he was always, you get the sense from, you know, from the beginning. And that scene solidifies it. That really galvanizes this idea that from the beginning, he was meant for something different. He was meant for something more than what he was handed. And go ahead. I'm sorry, Catherine.
It seems to be nostalgic for the seems to be nostalgic for the potential that he had when he was young.
Right. And hip hop and the music, again, talk about timelessness. You had music, the music thread that they ran through this spanned, I think, 5 decades. Decades worth, because I have multiple like lists of the soundtrack that I listen to because it's brilliant. It's freaking awesome. But they did such a good job of weaving the kind of the tangential storylines through it, mixing modern with the kind of the blaxploitation, sweet back shaft type of stuff, Singleton and Van Peebles stuff in with the modern stuff, and then kind of mixing The Wire in with the Spike Lee stuff. I mean, not to make it all like, oh, this was all racial, this was all, you know, the black TV for black, you know, but that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that they told the story as well through the musical choices as they did through the writing, and that's
what
amazing.
You had there in the music was literally Cottonmouth's life writ small through the music, because you have the music of his mentors, of his parents, of his grandparents. Then you begin to move into the music of his youth, of his parents, of his own, you know, as he's aged through the years. And what's wonderful is, you know, you've got that giant picture of Biggie Smalls there in his office.
So brilliant.
And it serves so many purposes, because it's easy to dismiss him as a very modern character, but yet you see his taste in music spans decades, and it makes him even more fascinating, wonderful, developed character with so many subtle notes, and none of it's just crammed down your throat. You are forced to work it all out yourself through snippets and through bits and pieces, and then you actually kind of feel sorry for him when he, you know, you find out that no matter how bad he is, his cousin is worse.
He's not the villain. That's the thing, is like the first 4 episodes of the show, he's the villain, and you're kind of left wondering why. You know, is this going to be one of those stories? Is this going to be a story where, you know, you don't have a clear, you know, black and white villain, which is weird in a comic book story, because the villain is so sympathetic. You know, the villain is, you feel for him trying to live up to a standard that was set that he doesn't want. He wants to be something else, and you get that immediately. And then you've got this other situation where his sister is in the same boat he is, except she just went a different direction with it, you know, and they're just both trying to, you know, live in, is this a parable on life on the mean streets of New York, or is this something different? And all of a sudden Diamondback shows up and you're like, shit, what the hell is happening now? You're just like,
well,
whoa.
It's like these different levels of evil. There's the, she's the corrupt evil.
She's the manipulative evil.
Yeah, she's the corrupt politician. He's the criminal, and then there's just the
crazy.
His brother, who's just flat evil.
Then there's crazy.
Then there's expletive.
See, Diamondback, in many ways, is an obsessed psychotic.
Yeah, psychotic.
Exactly the way that Kilgrave was. If you look at the two, if you juxtapose the two side by side, they are equals in that they are both have this mindless obsession with the object, in one case of his, you know, obsessive infatuation, and in the other case of his just this burning hatred that had nothing to do with the path he took in life. But as soon as he has the opportunity to feel like he's revenged himself,
Right.
And, you know, Luke Cage getting superpowers is just like, okay, now even God is against me.
Right. Right. Like, you've been given everything.
Your dad was against me, but apparently God loves you best.
Like, you've been given everything. I've been given nothing. I had to take what I got.
I didn't want this. I didn't ask for this. I didn't ask to be let off the hook because my dad was a preacher and he couldn't let it be known that he was your dad, too. I didn't ask to get superpowers and you have to go find some hammer tech suit. Which the hammer tech was a great nod back to Iron Man and to the Marvel Universe, the cinematic universe, as well as the street vendor selling off his videos of the incident.
Yeah, this was a very heavy referential point to the Avengers movies. It was, they really went all in on making sure that you knew this happened in the same universe.
Yeah, because you have the technology that allows for the Judas bullet that comes from the Satari tech.
Right.
They're taking the cue. Exactly what I was hoping would happen is you would the Satari tech opened the door to every. I wrote a whole article. It opens the door for so many villains that would be ridiculous if you use their actual origins. But hey, look, hey presto, it's the best thing since mutants.
It's the Inhumans all over again.
Yeah, exactly.
But now I really liked Luke Cage. I think it might have been my favorite of all of the Netflix shows yet. I think narrative wise, I think it was my favorite.
Oh, absolutely.
I loved it. I found it kind of interesting as a you have such a wide variety of bad guys, and I found it really interesting is to see how much sympathy I had for each one and to what point. It's kind of interesting if you'll play your game, this game with yourself, is to what point do you follow each character before you step off that train? How if this person was my husband or my brother or my family member, how far could I go with this person before I would have to step off? And there were so many different characters like that to so many different extents. Anyway, if you rewatch it, play that game with yourself.
That's a good idea, actually.
Also with Pops, I adored Pops, but the second that he offered a nice long dialogue of fatherly wisdom, I knew he was dead.
Oh yeah, oh he was gone.
Oh yeah,
I saw death standing behind him with the scythe, going, "Okay, you done?
Like, can we move this along, please? I got things to do."
Okay. Reapers are there whispering, yeah, talk about like responsibility and stuff.
That's right. Oh, yeah. Hey, I just left a guy's house named Ben. I think it was Ben Parker. Can we move this? I'm tired. Can we move this? Just talk about responsibility. That you have great power. Yeah, you got it. You got it. All right. Good. What was the guy's name?
Or no? Who was the? Oh, it was. The guy who was the.
It's not Snake Eyes. Here. What was it? It was Shades. Shades. Yeah. God, I loved that character. Just the level of sycophancy guy inhabited was so good. Just so good.
Yeah, play that game with Shades. See how far you'd ride with Shades.
You know what, though? I loved that character. My two favorite characters, though. You know, Luke Cage was great. Obviously, you know, Mike Colter can act his, you know, act his weight. He's amazing. Claire is awesome as always. The Misty Knight was great.
She
was brilliantly portrayed. And to get yet another player in the Marvel Universe onto the board.
Right, in that world, so firmly entrenched in that world that I'm looking at her 6-inch action figure right now.
Were you able to get one without the lazy eye? Because most of the ones I find.
No, yeah, I've got one. I've got one without the lazy eye. But, you know, but the two characters for me beyond just nailed the world for me, that built the world for me, were Turk and Chess. Turk and Fish were my two characters that absolutely kind of were the I forget now, I'm gonna, Kelly can whoop my ass later, but what was the chorus, the Greek chorus of the show?
Oh,
right?
Exactly. I was about to say the same damn thing. Mm-hmm. Get off of my page, you're creeping me out.
they told the story from either side of the story, kind of met in, kind of standing together in the middle, just one kind of went left and one kind of went right, but they told that story brilliantly and beautifully about, you know, the tipping point. They were sort of that middle line. They were the crossroads.
Bobby Fish's wonderful line when the Diamondback shows up with the armor on. So what are you, a pimp stormtrooper?
Yes. I forgot about that. That was great. But yeah, so that to me was the story. Just the same as, you know, Patsy Walker and those are the story. Just the same as Foggy Nelson and Karen are the story. That's,
oh, I know.
That's what they're doing so well.
This allows you to have some of the supporting characters that you couldn't have in a movie.
Right, right. It's so good. Like, it allows you to flesh out. What was the name of the cop that broke bad? Again, another guy you're fairly sympathetic for that you shouldn't be. The chief of police, somebody else you're sympathetic for that you shouldn't be. Pretty much just everybody. You're every person in the show. You're just like, ah, come on, guys, can't we figure this out? With the exception of Diamondback, who you're just like, God damn it, man, seriously.
Yeah, Diamondback's just bad news from hello.
Yeah. But everybody else kind of have that
they
weird...
They did a great job of letting you get to know a character and then like, oh, okay, you're not good either. you're not so nice after all. You're a jerk. And one thing I think, was it Catherine may have pointed this out after we'd seen Luke Cage, or maybe I forget, but almost every character that was with the police force was not white.
Correct. There were only one, I believe, one primary player.
One or two. Yeah, only one primary, but there were just a handful. And I don't think – I saw that more as a move to try to reflect what, you know, New York precincts are probably very much the level of diversity, because there are a lot of African-Americans and Asians in police work. And, you know, a lot of areas, a lot of parts of a city of that size – you don't necessarily see a bunch of white guys. It's not like Barney Miller, you know?
Right, right. It's not like NYPD Blue out there.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. And so I really like that fact, because it allowed you to have in a panoply of evil, from like bad to, you know, from nasty to bad to just downright pure unadulterated evil.
Mm-hmm.
It allowed you to say, well, you know, there are some good cops. There are cops who are just, you know, good or bad, who are also African Americans. So it allows you to, in addition to Luke Cage being a good guy, you've got like Pops, who has redeemed himself. You have other characters. So it doesn't become like, oh, well, this is just a big thing saying all black people are bad.
Right. Well, for sure.
It does not allow that angle to come in. And I applaud them for finding a way to make that happen, because unfortunately, especially in this day and age, people are angling for every controversy they can find.
Right.
Right, right.
It wasn't a racially galvanizing show.
Yeah.
It was very much there are good people, there are bad people, this is a show, this is a comic book show about redemption. This is a comic book show about New York. New York.
And then you have even characters like the waitress who, you know, falls under the spell of power and money, and then in her redemption is ultimately her downfall.
Right, right.
You know,
well, I agree. By diversifying the casting, you can allow the story to follow the characters just as the characters, by themselves, not as any sort of other societal role or like Cole's saying, you don't make you don't draw any other lines other than each individual character being just themselves.
Can you imagine how much it would have distracted from the brilliance of the show if they would have let those, if they would have gone fishing for controversy instead of just making the show they wanted to make?
Oh, I know.
It would have been a huge waste.
And the
we wouldn't have got a show that we would be talking and want to talk about in the way we want to talk about this one.
But we also can't ignore the fact that this show, and I've read articles by the writers that talked about how this show, they were writing this show when the Trayvon Martin shooting happened and how it affected what they were doing, because that became a very racially divisive situation.
Oh, yes.
And how they handled it in terms of the show, which they did. In the sense that he was walking around as a black man with a hoodie on, wanted in New York, and in order to brilliantly hide that, runs into Method Man at a bodega, which I thought was just the best.
And the thing is, you just stole my thunder, because for the second time ever on this show, I was going to mention Method Man. And you were so proud when I said Method
Man. I was very proud. I am still proud that you talked about Method Man on this show. But when they met and they had the hoodie, and the hoodie had a bunch of holes in it, so in order to hide the identity of who Power Man was, everybody was walking around town in hoodies with bullet holes in them.
Brilliant. One thing I wanted to mention was something that I really impressed me about it was along the storyline. You know, you have you have the ridiculous turn where everybody's after the superhero. Nobody understands the superhero.
Right.
Well, you had that, which is kind of a stereotypical move. But it was the people with the microphones and the camera and the media attention who had that opinion, and what that hoodie thing allowed you to actually see was it. Just because the people with the camera and the microphones and the attention had that opinion, the neighborhood did not have that opinion.
Right.
And it was the majority of the people who had no public voice believed completely the opposite. And this was their way of silently drowning that out. And I thought if we learn anything, it's just because you see it on television doesn't mean that's the majority of the opinion in this world.
Don't make it so.
Well, don't fall into the trap of it's true because I said it.
Right.
And like you have the politician, the cousin there, you know, where she's trying to put her spin on it, ever spinning everything in her own favor, you know, even to her own constituents. But her constituency is siding with her enemy in a sense. And I love that. Had a very kind of with Method Man going out and spreading the word through song and
that was cool. Yeah,
and the Hero for Hire was a wonderful nod there a couple of times where you get that little everybody's trying to hire him, or you know he's being called a hero for hire, and Pop called him Power Man. Stuff like that was absolutely brilliant. But one of the things that had kind of it felt like Warriors, you know, where they go on the radio.
It did. Yeah,
and galvanize the community. It had that sort of vibe there with that, and then you know the handing out of the hoodies to where the whole neighborhood's coming out in solidarity and helping, because you know as much as it irks them, do you really want to try to round up everybody in a hoodie and try to say that it's obstruction of justice? Because then you have to prove that the reason they were wearing that, you know, hoodie full of holes was obstruction of justice versus, say, just that's the new fashion. Yeah, it's the new fashion trend.
Yeah, haven't you seen Kanye's fashion line? I mean,
yeah. Ouch. but let's talk, as we probably need to wrap up and get moving out of here.
Yeah, I think it's probably time.
Oh my God.
We've been doing this a while.
But let's talk about some of the Easter eggs and nods, the most wonderful of which was the origin story leading to
Yes.
20 seconds of the 70s comic Power Man with the headband replacing the tiara and the gauntlets.
Oh, my God, it was so good.
Even right down to a length of chain.
For a belt, yeah.
And the open yellow shirt because it's just too big. But when he's gathering all of that up, and giving us that nod. One of the things I think is wonderful is that the prison was, in Georgia?
Yes.
And part of this could be set dressing, like, you know, having anybody from the South apparently has hubcaps hanging on the wall out on their back porch.
Right.
There's the truck that's in the foreground. I didn't notice this until I was doing some research and trying to find imagery of that scene. The bumper sticker on the truck, "You want my guns?" And there's a couple of crossed rifles. Come get them.
Really?
And while that dresses the set to be very Georgian or very Deep South in its sentiment, it's also wonderful foreshadowing.
Right, right.
Because that's what Luke Cage is ultimately doing, is coming to get my guns. If you're Cottonmouth or Diamondback.
Oh my God, I didn't even realize that, but yeah, no, you're absolutely right. But yeah, there were too many Easter eggs, just so many.
Chock a block from everything from the aforementioned cinematic universe nods a go-go to all of the nods to the past to I think I hadn't quite caught this, but after we'd both seen it, Andy pointed out that when Claire goes and gets finds the martial arts training.
Oh yeah.
Little ad there and pulls the number, that it's Colleen Wing who, Misty Knight and Colleen Wing were private detectives together as Nightwing Restorations.
Yep. They were part of Heroes for Hire. So they've set up that jump to Iron Fist at that point is what we're seeing.
Absolutely. And you also have a wonderful little nod to, you know, what are we going to do with Pops? Because we got the place all fixed up only to get it blowed up again.
Right.
What are we going to do with this thing now? Because we pretty much, I guess, because rent control or something. I don't know.
Right. Whatever.
They get to have it. They can do whatever they want with it. And apparently there's no zoning because of the mob. And what?
Huh?
What? Where? La Cosa Nostra? What? But they, what the hell that was. But I see that as becoming the storefront for Heroes for Hire.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's goes beyond speculation. I'm pretty sure that that's.
Do you think they're going to keep this broken stack machine with all the stale snacks in it?
I hope so. I hope so.
I hope so too, because nothing's like grabbing like a payday bar and there's like, it's like 40 or 50 peanuts and then a piece of spent like hot lead that's still embedded.
Oh, yeah. And it's so stale, you leave your filling in it.
Yeah.
Gross.
And I think we can't talk about both of these shows. We can't wrap this up without the one thing that draws the two of them beautifully together is the the bed-breaking scene.
Oh, my gosh. You really want to talk about the sex, don't you?
I want to talk about the fact that the post-coital...
Jesus.
Sweet Christmas.
Yeah, that was great. That was absolutely fantastic.
Like, okay, the characters just orgasmed, now the fanboys turn.
Well, at one point Lacey looked at me and she was during Luke Cage and was like, in the comic books, does he really say Sweet Christmas that much? I'm like, you know, at least three times an issue. So we're seriously,
mud the pus bucket.
Right.
Because one of the things that I read a while back is that, you know, they were trying to play upon the blaxploitation period when Luke Cage was created at Marvel.
Right.
But the one thing they couldn't do was cuss like a bunch of rabid sailors.
Right.
So literally, they had to give Luke Cage wholesome colloquialisms like Sweet Christmas. And what's wonderful is the fact that Luke Cage in the show says, "I don't curse."
Right, I don't curse.
And if you're unfamiliar with that aspect of his origins, when you find that out, as I hope many of you just have, that makes it even cooler that line's in there, because it's kind of, whether they meant it or not, it's kind of a nod to the fact that he couldn't curse.
Right, and it explains away why everybody in this world is just dropping F-bombs and S-bombs and N-bombs and whatever bombs they want, and Luke Cage doesn't.
Yeah.
You know, he's sort of the Captain America, Spider-Man figure of this thing, so it's obvious, you know, he wouldn't, but there now we have the reason for that. Now we have the why behind
exactly.
It.
Exactly. And also, you know, it's maybe part of his upbringing because, you know, the only boy who could ever reach me was the son of a preacher.
Can
man.
We not? Okay, we. I think the we only should wrap boy it up now. I can't. Catherine, I don't know how you do this on a regular basis.
Oh, God.
I'm not even blood related to him, and I can't do this. Oh, my gosh. All right, so, Catherine, as company, what are your final thoughts on these, and what are you looking forward to coming in? Oh, the one thing I did want to touch on was, and Cole and I had talked about this offline a little bit, is that I've heard a lot, they've announced that the Defenders show, after Iron Fist, there's going to be the Defenders. The Defenders is going to be, as we understand it now, and I imagine that we're going to have a few kind of outside characters eking in. I know that they've already said that Karen Page and Misty Knight are going to be in it, but it's going to be Iron Fist, it's going to be Jessica Jones, it's going to be Luke Cage, and it's going to be Daredevil. But it's only going to be 8 episodes. So there's been a lot of dust, a lot of stomp about the fact that it's only going to be 8 episodes. And I think I know the reason for that. The reason for that is because we've had 2 seasons of Daredevil. We've had, you know, a season of Jessica Jones and a season of Luke Cage. We're going to have an entire season of Iron Fist. So I look at it like this. Those are the monthly comics. Those are your, you know, your every month. It was one issue of those, was one episode of those shows.
Right.
The Defenders series is the special. It's the crossover event.
It's the annual.
It's going to be a tight storyline around one event. You don't have to get origins. We don't have to spend time developing people. We don't have to spend time figuring out who these guys are. They're going to be smart enough not to go back to that and tell us everything again. They're just going to throw us right into the fire, and I kind of can't wait for that. That's the reason it's going to be 8 and not 12 or 13, and I'm very excited about that. I don't think we're going to get a lot of introduction into new heroes. I think we got who we're going to get, and they're going to run with it, and I think it's going to be friggin' phenomenal. I can't wait. That's all I wanted to say about that.
That's a good point.
So what do you think, Catherine? What are your takeaways from this stuff?
Well, I do enjoy getting to know new heroes that I haven't read about yet. So I don't go in with a bunch of preconceived notions or anything like that. I can just enjoy the storyline as it's presented. I did that with Guardians of the Galaxy, and I did it with these shows too. I really enjoy the characters. I enjoy the characters to the extent that I would like to pick up the comics and read other writers' versions of these same people. And I'm looking forward to more and more Netflix and movies and things like that that will take me from the screen to the page. As long as that can happen, I'm happy. And I know that you guys are all about promoting reading and enjoying comics themselves, and I hope that succeeds in doing this for a lot of other people, bringing them into comics, and also appreciating the fact that different writers write the same characters in totally different ways, and instead of complaining about the differences, maybe really enjoying all the different realizations of the same characters.
Couldn't have said it better myself, Catherine. Thank you so much for that, and thank you for being on the show yet again.
Yes.
Oh, I had fun.
You didn't realize that, like when we were last week, we were wrapping up, and we couldn't remember what the show was going to be about. And I finally got to look at the schedule. Like, wow, we're actually going to have you back to back. So that why not? You know,
yeah,
why not have the same
two similar topics, but very, very different. You know, in the tick. And Jessica Jones and Luke Cage, but you know it's always a pleasure to have you on. You bring a very unique and intelligent voice that Cole and I often don't have on our own. You know, there's definitely a disparation between, like, when we have Eddie on and we talk about Jack Chick, and then when we have Catherine on and we talk smart, intelligent, informed things. Nobody's talking about being the Hispanic Titanic on this episode.
That's the awesome thing about Hayes Kids Comics, and I think that that's the reason it's run as long as it has, is because you're not the same show, different topic every time. And that says a lot about you, and that makes you very special and very unique. So please be proud of that.
Yeah, you hear that, Chris Hardwick? Be proud of that.
Yeah.
You jackass. Okay, so with all that being
that's
I don't know. I think it kind of is with him. I kind of think maybe it is.
I think he would embrace that.
Well, he's married now, so what you need to do is get to know.
Yeah, well, you know, aside from the fact that she's like the heiress to the Heinz fortune or something like that, I think that you're right. I don't think I'm getting close, though. That's the unfortunate part of that. Cole, why don't you go ahead and wrap us up, and we'll
most heiresses aren't talking to us.
That's right. We don't talk to a lot of heiresses. Heiresses of used car lot fortunes, maybe, but not like the Heinz fortune.
And we're not talking like, you know, CarMax. We're talking like, you know,
like Bob's. Like,
yeah, Bob's Deals on Wheels.
That's right. Why don't you wrap us up? We'll get out of here. We've gone long again, but I think it was worth it. So
absolutely.
Tie us up.
I want to say really quick in closing, thank you to you,
yes,
Andrew Farmer, who
stop
will, I, you know, we mention it in passing from time to time, and he's like an hour ahead of me, so he's living in my future. Every time we do one
it doesn't
of these
end well. I'm just warning
so,
you now.
Yeah, depending on what time we start, you know, if we wrap up at 10 o'clock or 10:30, it's 11 or 11:30 for him. So it's, you know, he takes the time not only to stay up late, make these things happen, and then he's got to, like, the next day sometimes cut the show and get it over to me, and all I have to do is, like, you know, write a few words and put up a few pictures that I got off the internet. And so I just want to thank my esteemed creator of this show and my host with the most here, because you do actually have to put in that extra hour, as it were.
Oh, it's totally, this is therapy for me, so it's totally,
I mean,
worth
granted,
it.
It's your damn show, but still, shut up and take it.
All right. I'll take it.
So with that said, this of course we're coming to you from the Jedi Cole Universe, JediCole.com, home of Andrew and Sasquatch in the Morning
Cage Match. Hey-oh.
It's JediCole.com. You can write to us at write to us at JCUMail@yahoo.com. You can look for the tweets, which I'm getting, I think I've got like 200 or 300 tweets nowadays. Twitter at the Jedi Cole U. And be sure, in just a couple of days after you hear this issue of Hey Kids Comics, which, by the way, we are now powered by Cinelinks. So if you're not catching us here, you're probably catching us over at Cinelinks, and thank you for that. You can check out at watchonairlive.com on Sunday the 6th, whatever the hell day Sunday is, 12 noon to 1 p.m. Central. Eddie Medina and I are back with the Rancor Pit Live after about a month of hiatus, and we will be doing our first ever episode in the brand new studios in the CBS radio building. We could not be more excited. So be sure and check out the State of Star Wars 2016, where we talk about where Star Wars stands as of this year, and kind of address the nation on that, because somehow we're just taking that over. And I'm veg here.
There you go. All right, well, join us next week when we I don't know what we're talking about. It doesn't matter.
We are having Creator Spotlight. I actually did my homework.
Oh.
Creator Spotlight number 6, The Man, The Stan. No one else but Stan Lee.
Oh, so Eddie's going to be back. All right, good. That's good.
We are celebrating the fact that, or not really celebrating, perhaps lamenting the fact that Stan Lee this year will end his convention circuit touring for good. He's retiring from conventions at like 100, and he will actually be ending his tour here in the Dallas area at the Nerdtacular New Year's Eve, and I'll try to be sure and put a link up when we do that show to that convention. It's going to be an amazing convention coming up very soon.
There you go. So next week we talk about Stan the Man Lee and our creator spotlight, and I don't know about you, Cole, but as we head out of here, you know what I would really like to see? I would really like to see Steve Ditko and Stan Lee in a
cage match!
Say goodnight, everybody.
Oh,
goodnight, everybody!
Can I say it?
Yes.
Read, collect, enjoy, and read comics.
There you go. Good night, everybody. We'll see you next week for Stan Lee Cage Match. I don't think that's
right.